Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by the great people, and I mean great people, at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You need to have a great insurance agent, great relationship with them. Purdy Insurance has the ability in a wide range of insurance. I don't care if it's personal, professional, commercial, business, auto, whatever it happens to be. You want to be able to find the right insurance, and they'll go across lines to get it at the right price. It's your budget, but it also fits what you need insurance-wise. And if there's a claim, they act as if it happened to them. Why? Purdy Insurance, they care about one thing and one thing only, you, the customer. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Manning back to throw. Dips one left. Odell's got it on the run. Breaks free across the 40. He's to the 30. Foot race 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown Giants. 61 yards.
Bob Papa with the call on the Giants radio network last night as the Giants sweep the Dallas Cowboys. They win 10-7 at MetLife Stadium last night in the Meadowlands. And Giants have the wild card at the moment at 9-4. They're two games back of the Cowboys. They sweep Dallas. Kim Jones is going to join us tomorrow. She does a lot of work covering the Giants for NFL Network. We'll get her perspective on the whole thing tomorrow at 3:35. Let's see. Donnie Collins now joins us from the Scranton Times-Tribune. Donnie, welcome. Great to have you with us. It's now been 9 days since Penn State won the Big Ten Championship, beating Wisconsin, which has given all of us, including you, time to think and reflect about how they got here. So what kind of context can you now put this in with at least some time to look in the rearview mirror?
You can't. It's almost become a cliche to say, well, we as people who were around the team all year didn't see this coming, and we didn't. I was looking at the town and gown yesterday. I found it on top of my refrigerator, and I mean, I think the person, whichever reporter it was, I don't remember, picked 8 wins. I think that was the best anybody thought this team would do, and they won 11. I mean, my God, how do you understate what this team accomplished this year? And to win 9 in a row to close it out, and not just win 9 in a row, but to play dominant football for long stretches of those 9 wins. I've never seen anything like it. I there's a lot of reasons why it happened. We could sit here and talk all day about why it changed, but. You know, hey, Trace McSorley played a lot better over the last 9 games. Maybe he opened things up for Saquon Barkley. Receivers started winning one-on-one battles. They were dominating in the trenches. I mean, the offensive line went from very suspect to very good in a matter of a week. Getting those linebackers back helped. The secondary played well. Special teams was a big change from 2015 to 2016. But I think the amazing thing about it to me is, and what I still haven't really even been able to put into words yet, is how it happened seemingly so quickly after, 49-10 loss in Ann Arbor, to come out and change everything in the second half of the Minnesota game. It's one of the better stories I think I've ever covered.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, the Irvin Charles catch, which I'm not so sure he was ready for, but I mean, the Irvin Charles catch seemed to change the juice on the sideline, in the seats. It seemed like it was a turning point. And I remember Jack Ham and I in the commercial break said, that's the turning point, right? For you get a gut feeling about it. What did you think when you saw that play?
Well, yeah, it was definitely a turning point. I mean, looking back, but at that point, you know, they're down, I think it was 13-3. They weren't even really moving the ball. And Charles isn't even looking for the pass.
No.
And Trace throws a bullet right on the numbers. And, you know, Irv, who's had a tough time catching the ball down the stretch, caught that one. They score a touchdown. And I think what they took away from that play after the game was they really have to start stretching the field.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, there was a lot of talk at that point about how defenses were loading up the box. They were putting the extra guy in to stop, you know, kind of slow down Barkley and, you know, see what they try to take away the big part of the Penn State offense. But I think that throw, I mean, more than anything showed them, hey, look, we have to throw the ball down the field. We got to get that safety out of the box, and we're going to have to be the ones who move them, because they're just, until we show we can get the ball down the field, they're just going to keep trying to slow down Barkley. Now, did they try to load the box up on them on obvious running downs down the stretch? Yeah, they did, but they couldn't do it every down anymore. And I think that one play, I don't think that convinced defenses that, you know, we have to honor the Penn State passing game, but I think it convinced the Penn State offense that it was good enough to be honored. And, you know, and McSorley, after, you know, I for four games, I didn't think Trace McSorley was the guy to get the ball down the field. And now, clearly, you look back on it, and that's been his strength. He, you know, for all his, you know, for his leadership ability, for his, you know, clutch playmaking, for his running, I think what he did best was throw the ball down the field and make those big chunk plays that James Franklin and Joe Moore had always talked about. And that was really the start of that, you know, to me. They didn't make very many until that point.
The you're around the players post game, media rooms, so forth. Get a sense of what it was A, like to deal with them, and B, what they projected to you about their team.
They never quit, and that's what everybody will tell you. I mean, Brian Guy will tell you that. Jason Kapinda will tell you that. McSorley will tell you that. Saquon will tell you that. Everybody, they never quit. And now, why didn't they? You know, why when the evidence suggested, you know, nobody's going to quit. I mean, no one's going to say, "All right, we're 2-2, we're done." Excuse me, but they're going to, you know, what was in their DNA to make it that way, and a lot of it, you know, I think a lot of it is, yeah, a lot of credit there has to go to Franklin, has to go to the staff, and, you know, him getting that vote of confidence from Sandy Barber when he got it early October. I think that helped the players. A couple of guys and I were talking about that after the game. You know, Kabindo was one who's a great kid. He's got great perspective on everything. And he kind of said, hey, look, you know, that loosened us up. If the school was supporting our coach, you know, we had reason to go out and support him even more and play hard and you know, it kind of, you know, trust the process even more. And then, you know, and the trust the process thing has become a cliche also, but these guys did. And you know, it's not a cliche if it works, and it's not a cliche if it's really true. And I think that's what these guys did. They believed someday that they were going to be good, even when, you know, they're losing 49-10 to Michigan, and even when, you know, they're struggling against Pitt and Temple's within 7 points, and the fans are all over them, and, you know, and there's doubts. That these guys didn't doubt, and you know, that play against Minnesota, the Barkley run at the end of that game, and the Ohio State win, you know, at that point, these guys realized, hey, we're pretty good. We're talented. We're going to go out there and, you know, and play like this consistently every week. And the other thing these guys did, I think that kind of, I don't want to say got underplayed, but maybe didn't get talked about enough, was they took it into their own hands after the Michigan loss.
Right.
To a certain degree, you know, they had the players only meeting, you know, to watch the films on Mondays. And That seems to have helped. It maybe it bonded this team a little bit. Maybe they got a lot out of that film session. Maybe they were more prepared. I don't know what it was, but they all, you know, everybody's got a different theory, but it works. And what, you know, to be able to lose 49-10 and get just manhandled in the process,
yeah,
and come out and become a better team from it, that shows a lot of character.
Yeah, no, it does. USC in the Rose Bowl. What kind of read, if any, do you have on USC, or are you still in the process of gathering?
I've watched two of their games, kind of in the last nine games. You know, just kind of scanning them to see what they, what they're getting. And honestly, they're getting what Penn State's getting. I mean, they're getting very good quarterback play. You know, they switch quarterbacks, but they're getting better play now. They're getting some good, you know, defensively their secondary is very strong. It makes them, you know, to me, I'm not going to break it down like Joe Moorhead or Brent Pry.
Right.
But to me, they're making a lot of plays in the secondary. And they're good. That's the thing with this. You know, they could start 1-3, and Penn State could start 2-2. But Penn State's still Penn State, and USC is still USC. They still have all those players. You know, they're still getting 4- and 5-star recruits out at USC, and they're still the best recruiting team in the West. So, you know, whether they're, you know, no matter how they start, they're still very talented. Now they're getting the most out of that talent. And the other thing, the thing with Penn State is I don't think you could kind of downplay momentum, and USC also has momentum. So it's going to be interesting to see how a couple of weeks off is going to affect these teams. How, you know, is it going to affect one more than the other, or either at all? But I think USC is very, very much like Penn State. Not they don't play the same way, but right now they have to be feeling the same way.
The last couple of years, Penn State's gone to the Pinstripe Bowl and to the Tax Slayer Bowl. Yeah, and people talk about they're only interested, some people, in the major bowls. How do you view the number of bowl games there are these days? And because you've had to cover a couple of these along the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's too many. I think we'll all admit there's too many.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if you're a fan, maybe, you know, there's an interesting matchup. And that's what I do. I try to look for the interesting, you know, the matchups of, you know, teams that you don't normally see. I mean, I remember one year USC played Nebraska, and I think it might have been the Holiday Bowl or the Foster Farms Bowl or something like that. And I thought, that's a neat matchup. I'll watch it. You know, so, I just think there's a lot of money involved, and they're going to keep adding. And I don't particularly want to support that. And honestly, you're gonna get no one's going to watch the Quick Lane Bowl. Let's face it, but, you know, they bring some money in for the Big Ten, so yeah, well, they're gonna put it on 5 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever they're gonna put it on, whatever day, and hope somebody watches it. And until people stop watching, we're gonna have this issue. But, you know, that said, like, I was much more, you know, from a Penn State perspective, the last two bowl games, I was much more juiced up for the Pinstripe Bowl.
Sure.
You know, as somebody who's, you know, going to cover the game, than I was the Tax Slayer Bowl. Because I knew people were going to watch the Pinstripe Bowl because of when it was on, where the matchup is going to be big in the Northeast, who was playing, and, you know, what it meant for Penn State at the time. But also, it was a neat venue. I really like Yankee Stadium. I've covered a lot of baseball games at Yankee Stadium, and I like it better as a football venue. So, to me, it was neat to see it in that regard. But a lot of these, you know, who cares about a lot of these games? I just think there's too many of them. There's a lot of teams that. I mean, if I had my druthers, I'd go back and,
sure,
you know, what the bowl committees match them up however they want, you know, invite team. I just thought it was better back then, and I know they're trying, and I know they're trying to produce a champion, but, you know, there's still so much debate over all that
sure,
that I don't know if it's really benefiting the system.
Donnie, you're always a really great gauge for the people in your area and the Northeastern Pennsylvania, Back Mountains, Grant, Wilkes-Barre, into the Poconos is a great Penn State area. What kind of gauge have the fans given to you about what the season meant to them?
It's been a big deal. Hey, it's been the big story here. I mean, here in Scranton, we had it's gonna be close. We always do like every paper does. But, you know, what's the big story of the year? And it's gonna be close. And with Penn State and we had the AAA baseball team that won the national championship. It's going to be close. And if you told me that in September, I would never have believed it. But after the season the Rail Riders had, they won their division, won their league, won everything, won the national championship, first time ever. But I think the Penn State story may have topped it. It's been that good. And, you know, last week I did one of my stories I did was on, who's going to this game. And you cannot find a travel agency around here who has tickets to this. Everybody, if they had them, they sold out. One said they sold out within 18 hours. Another one was, you know, they had like six left. And I was told they might be the only six packages left to get to this game. The people were flocking to get to the, to get to the airports for this. And I'm, it's surprising because you're a fan and you don't know on Saturday really where you're going. And then on Sunday, you're throwing down $5,000 to Pasadena on New Year's Day. It's amazing. People were dying for this. And that's what one of the agents told me. And they've seen this a lot more than I have. And this guy said, I've never seen this kind of demand for a game, this kind of passion for a team. And honestly, he said, if I had 200 seats, I could have sold 200.
Wow. Wow. Donnie, thanks so much. Always enjoy the talks very much and your perspective.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Donnie Collins, Scranton Times-Tribune. Always great to have him on the show. And we'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Great to have you with us. Saquon Barkley, third-team Associated Press All-American, announced today. Second-team Sporting News. Yesterday, he won the team MVP award. And at the end, he says, I hope everybody has a nice day. So, of course, I'm the next person up to speak. I said, anytime you're touching the football, I'm having a great day. Let's see.
Well, that's right. Football banquet was last night. Any fun highlights to share?
It was an hour and 51 minutes, so I came in at under 2 hours. So that was good. The highlight video was awesome. Sickles defensive MV. No, see, he won the Reed Robinson Line Award. Alex Gellerstadt and Irvin Pay were the scout team players of the year. Shaka Tony, defensive scout team player of the year. Let's see. Josh McPherson, scout team special teams player of the year. Brandon Bell, senior MVP. Trace McSorley, offensive MVP. In fact, you know what? Sickles won the defensive MVP. He was the defensive MVP. Trace was the offensive MVP. Tyler Davis was the scouting team's MVP. Barkley was the overall MVP, and Brandon Bell is the senior MVP. So those are the highlights. So there you go. Lane Kiffin gets the job at Florida Atlantic. You're the offensive coordinator at Alabama. And you're also a focal point of TV guys every time they go in there and they talk about Lane Kiffin's offense, Lane Kiffin's offense, Lane Kiffin's offense. Hear about it over and over and over again. Ask yourself, why is it that despite attempts, he can't get a head coaching job until Florida Atlantic? I mean, ask yourself, why? Shot at Houston, they went with Major Applewhite. Was in the running for the Maryland job last year, go with DJ Durkin. He must not project well in interviews. As we all know, he's had a tendency to come off as the smartest guy in the room in certain press settings. Now, whether he comes out like that in interviews, I don't know. Well, we all know that when it comes to press conferences and the like, he just comes off like he's the smartest dude in the room. And I can assure you, he's, you know, he's smart, but there's a good chance he probably isn't the smartest person in the room. So now, here's a guy that takes the Florida Atlantic job because he knows at the age of 41, he's got to be the head coach of something. And there are a lot of stories going around right now in Tuscaloosa and in Birmingham that he needed to come up with something. Why? Because no matter what, he was not going to be the offensive coordinator at Alabama next year. How about that? Playing like Steve Adazio when they took the Temple job. I mean, Penn State's playing Florida. Adazio's the offensive coordinator. We were hearing all week privately from people that he was done as the offensive coordinator there. Suddenly out of nowhere, he's the head coach of Temple. Like, wow, that's a pretty good save.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for... to tell you about our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have been here for decades, and your business is a success for decades because the customer comes first, and you know your customers. You know what they need. You listen to them, and then you find them the right insurance at the right price because you do know them, and you do listen to them. Hey, be the customer that they get to know. Be the customer that ends up being first to them. Customer comes first to Purdy Insurance, and they carry a wide variety of insurance, a wide variety of insurance needs. There's a claim. They act as if it happened to them. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street, and somebody go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. Did you happen to see the overhead picture of the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum yesterday? The Rams were the hot commodity, red hot, scorching hot. Sell out every game. Can't wait. We got pro football back. Two-thirds of the stadium filled yesterday. The other third now. Really? And then today they fired Jeff Fisher. But here's the sidebar to that. The Chargers want to move there? Really? Now, the Chargers are in an interesting spot in all this. Last Wednesday, the owner of the Chargers, Dean Spanos, met with San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer. Now, you know that they have already said that they are going to declare an intention about Los Angeles before January 15th. Now, the NFL is okay with that because guess what? If they declare, just declare, doesn't mean they're going, but if they declare the intention, it blocks the Raiders from going. And the NFL doesn't want the Raiders there. But I think the NFL wants a team in Las Vegas, a team in Los Angeles, and a team in San Diego. How do you make it happen? There's now some word going around that the Chargers may declare an exploratory attempt to go to Los Angeles with the idea of a better organized petition on the ballot for the 2018 election in San Diego. And they say that by the time that that comes up, it'll be better organized, and they would ask for a lower hotel tax than the one that was proposed this time. Interesting. Now, why voters would care about the size of the hotel tax is beyond me. You don't go to the hotels. excuse me, how many of you have gone to hotels in Danville? Quick, show of hands here. None of you have. But it was a problem. They only got 43% of the vote. I mean, they got whacked in November. So they could say, we want to opt for Los Angeles and then just go. Or they could say that we're going to explore going to Los Angeles, hold off for 2 years, get everything, all the ducks in a row, and give it one more shot in San Diego. That appears to be the options. But the Rams end up being the bozo of the day because they squandered all their collateral in 4 months. They squandered it all. How about that? All right. Let's get everybody up to date here on what's going on in sports. And talked about Penn State. No practices until Friday. They did do some. The non-travel group had two practices on Friday and Saturday. I talked to several players yesterday about being off this week or the past week. You know, like guys like John Reed and Trace McSorley and, you know, several guys I talked to. And they all said the same thing. Man, it felt good to be off a week. They are all starting to feel better because every team, every player in college football and in pro football, they're sore. They're hurting at the end of the year. Hurting. And they all say that the break was necessary. Now, they'll all get back together as a team on Friday. They'll do Friday development on Saturday. So that's the non-travel guys. They're all traveling to the Rose Bowl, but that's just a term. There then is a full team Sunday, full team Monday, full team Tuesday, then a break until they go to California on the 27th, I want to say. So that gives you an idea of what they're doing. You know. Because the fifth team practice thing's a myth. I mean, usually they get 11 or 12 when it's all said and done. Kind of right around that area. Enough to look at players for next year, enough to put in the game plan for this year. Plus, Penn State has shortened the gap between games by a week, too. I mean, Penn State will play 29 days after its last game instead of playing 36 days after its last game. That does make a slight difference. You've already had your four extra practices to get ready for another game. So you've had four practices and a game in that week span that you didn't have a year ago. So that makes a big difference.
So the players, if they wanted to last week, did they have like regularly scheduled lifting with Dwight in the weight room, or they do like their usual workouts?
No, they have regular. I mean, they have lifts, regular lifts. Okay. But in terms of going out doing any practice, no, there's no practice. In fact, most of the coaches weren't even here last week. They were recruiting.
Yeah, I was wondering, but since they were out, if the guys just got complete rest or maybe a bonus day or two before they went to.
Most of them come in and lift anyway because it's just good for them. It's just good for him. You just want to keep the tone going. And that's good. But that's what they were doing. And they all said the same thing. Like, it was great to get some time off. Plus, they've been studying. They've got finals this week. That's not easy. And look, the time off's fine for them. Because, again, you know, they've gone every single week since August 4th, or some number like that.
That's right, graduation, Friday and Saturday. Now, did you teach? Now, did you give your final exam to your students this morning?
They have a final project that's due.
Okay.
And it was due last week. I did my grades today. So my grades are done and filed. And so, I mean, that part's done. So my students don't have to worry about that. And the, but that's one of the reasons, for example, the basketball team, the Penn State basketball team is practicing at Bloomsburg on Saturday morning. You're like, what? They're practicing at Bloomsburg Saturday morning? What? And there's a reason for that. They play St. John's Sunday morning at 11. We'll be on at 10:30. Breakfast with Steve, Jeff, and Dick. From Madison Square Garden. Well, they can't practice here on campus because of commencement. The Jordan Center is all set up for that, so they can't practice here. So since they can't practice here, they're going to get on a bus at 8 a.m., and they're going to go to Bloomsburg, and they're going to practice there for 2 hours at Bloomsburg University. And then from there, they'll go to New York City, to Madison Square Garden. Now, for me, it's interesting because this will be coming up game for me 1016 in my career. Guess who my first game was with? Bloomsburg. I worked the game with a guy named Henry Mayle. Henry was the color analyst. Henry did a great job. Great guy, too. I last saw Henry a year ago at Northwestern. And we did the game, and Penn State beat Bloomsburg, I want to say 49-48, somewhere in that neighborhood. So one point game. Charlie Cronister was the head coach of Bloomsburg at the time, and Dick Harder was the coach of Penn State. That was my first game. So even though the game was in Rec Hall, the practice at Bloomsburg on Saturday, I'll be kind of looking around thinking, yeah, that was the first game. At least for me. Now, yesterday, somebody got up and they were talking about the roots of the Rose Bowl yesterday, and they were saying that the first ever Rose Bowl played on the current site. This is the 103rd Rose Bowl. But the first ever Rose Bowl played on its current site in Arroyo Seco. Was Penn State and USC in 1923. And when they were done, I got up and looked at the crowd and I said, I just want to point out that Jack Hamm and I did not do that game. Contrary to popular belief. So, could you do me a favor?
Okay.
When you see the suit,
okay,
tell him that the restraining order about being a spotter at the Rose Bowl is almost ready to be executed. I get these text messages from him all the time.
Say if he would eventually get it, Doug in Wellsboro will be very upset.
No, no, Doug's much higher in the list.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's see. Are you sure you don't need a spotter? I may even contract you with Learfield, so that would make it easier.
See, that's his in. He's clinging on to that like it's.
I texted back, no. He texts back, you're no fun. I texted back, per usual. Exactly. How about someone to help with your luggage? How about helping Roger produce? I'm versatile. The police found all of these to be very, very, and the judge looked at. He said, "I don't need to look at anymore."
Did he offer to get? did he offer to get Jack coffee, or get him another, or get him another seltzer water?
Look, don't make suggestions. Okay. Right. And it's pamplemousse. Okay, we don't just have seltzer water; we have pamplemousse.
Oh,
okay, pamplemousse is, I mean, Jack brings the pamplemousse every game. Now, admittedly, I have usually water, but I will open the pamplemousse once in a while, take a few sips here and there.
So if you say Perrier, he'd be like, right?
We've done the Perrier thing before. Okay? Right now, the beverage of choice is pamplemousse. And Jack is in charge of it. He brings it. Now, we feel we have an advantage over the suit on this where he can't really be involved, for example, getting the pamplemousse, because we don't think he can spell it. All right. I can't find it in the store. I can't spell it. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Happy holidays from everyone at Penn's Tavern. It's time for gathering friends and family, and Penn's Tavern wants you to make them your setting for your holiday party. Historic Penn's Tavern, recently voted as the Daily Items 2016 Reader's Choice for Best Tavern, is waiting for you. Penn's Tavern has an ambiance that cannot be duplicated. The Sarah Room is the original structure of the tavern. Built circa 1700s, the Sarah Room has original stone walls and wooden floors for an unmatched old-world feel. The Wixted Room, overlooking the Susquehanna River, attaches to a more modern River Room pub. The River Room has 12 local microbreweries on tap. And just in time for the holidays, choose Penn's Tavern gift certificates for the perfect stocking stuffer. Purchase 5 gift certificates in the same amount and receive a gift certificate of the same value at no charge from everyone at Penn's Tavern.
Okay, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Right now, what was the question again?
So, big fan of the show, Mike Torres, liked our Facebook page. Hope you do the same. He thought, I have the perfect question for Steve. I'm going to stump Steve on this. Who was the first true freshman Penn State player to rush for 100 yards in a game? First true freshman Penn State player to rush for 100 yards in a game.
It's only a guess on my part. My first thought was Dwayne Taylor. But I think he did it against Ohio State, 75. But
it is 75.
Okay. But that's the best I can come up with off the top of my head.
Well, if we are to believe Mike, he says it was Tom Donovan. 1975 game versus Stanford.
Tommy Donovan.
Claims it is on the 75 highlight DVD.
Tommy Donovan was a wide receiver.
Says he stumped everyone with this. Maybe that's
why. Well, Tommy did have a game where he did run the ball, but Tommy was mostly a wideout at Penn State. Remember, Tommy wore number 19, I think, if I recall correctly. So, and of course, the first guy that really played as a freshman was Jimmy Cephalo. I mean, he was like, yeah, Joe doesn't play freshman. Well, Jimmy Cephalo came in, he played him. So, yeah. So, there you go. But Tommy was mostly, when they got to 78, 77, 78, Tommy was a wideout. He and Cephalo and Bob Bassett. Bassett made one of the greatest catches I ever saw in 78. Oh, my goodness. One-handed over the middle against Maryland. Bob's a referee today. He's an official in the in the Big Ten. So I get a chance to talk to Bob every once in a while. He hasn't done Penn State games, for example. But what he's done is...
That was the first thing I was going to ask you.
Scrimmages. Yeah. Yes, he's done scrimmages. So I get a chance to talk to him once in a while. Yeah, I'll walk up to him and go, Bobby, missed that one over there. To be a jerk. I think you missed one there, Bob. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, it's No season, look, there have been great seasons here. I'm not so sure there's been one like this. The closest I can compare it to where you kind of, you know, at one point, but then this surpassed that. At one point, it was like, man, this kind of reminds me of the 1980 season, you know, where they'd come off of that Liberty Bowl year and they were trying to get back, and it kind of set the tone for 81 where they were ranked number one and 82 where they won the national championship. But this surpassed that because of how it finished out, by winning that game over Wisconsin and winning the Big Ten championship game. It surpassed that even. There just hasn't been anything like this. I mean, at any point. It's quite a celebration yesterday at the quarterback club. It really was. But it's interesting when you have those banquets, those quarterback club banquets, for example. There's always one more game after it. So it's the culmination of the regular season, but there's another game coming up. By the way, I should point out that Tom Donovan ran for over 100 yards in the game, even though he played linebacker. Greg Butler will tell everybody he had something to do with it. Only because that's Greg Butler. You know who else was on that 75 team that was really good? Long NFL career with the Cowboys, Tom Rafferty. Long NFL career.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.